and welcome to Adelwoods Into the Brew, episode 2, the summer edition. As you might have heard from the introduction, it is festival season and it is awfully hot. This is why I am not in my usual studio today, so the audio might be a bit off. Well, essentially, I'm in my garage. So this is actually where the magic happens. And if you're old enough to know this, hello MTV and welcome to my crib. So, and again, today with me is the author of The Art of Modern and Traditional Brewing, Javier Tortosa, as you can see, also in full summer mode. So,
straight from the forest.
Yeah, I wish I could go to a forest, but the problem is it's just way too hot. So this is why, from my part, I'll be covering something else today, which, yeah, might also interest some people who might be still a bit unsure about foraging. But let's recap from the last episode. So what did I try? Well, I worked with the blackberry leaves. I tried to ferment them. And I must say, the outcome was amazing because I have never smelled blackberry leaves that were so intensely floral while fermenting. Problem is, I got sidetracked and did not check on it for like 1 or 2 days. And well, they got moldy. Damn shame. Was really interested on how this would work out. Well, the good thing about blackberry leaves is essentially you can get them all year round, but of course in spring you can get the most in one go because of course the plant is thriving and well, you will definitely get the most fresh leaves. Pine cones I got, I also got cypress cones. I have 2 parts. Well, I have the pine cones in vodka, which has turned a very nice brown now. And I did find a very, well, decent bourbon, 5 years old, for a quite affordable price, in which I put the cypress cones. And the good thing is, currently, there's a shitload of very, very small new cones coming here. So I might add these too, because the ones that I had were like very, very big, very egg-like. So, and what has been going on with you, Javi? What did you try since the last episode?
Everything. Well, yeah, I tried, well, actually, I changed my job and things. I have been busy, but yeah, I've tried some of the ones that we're going to introduce today, because honestly, I needed to try it a little bit more. But Yarrow, of course, I'm always brewing with Yarrow. I think we talked about it last episode, right? Apple Mint as well, because it grows wild where I live. So I'm using it quite a lot. If someone has tried it, you will see that it's very powerful at the beginning, but it mellows really, really nice in stout and things like this. If you leave it for 4 months, like maturation time, something like this is really cool. And then new stuff. I was brewing with watermelon, with figs, with a lot of dried stuff that I have in the freezer, and I need to get rid of that because otherwise at home they're going to tell me, come on, we cannot put actual food into the freezer, so start getting rid of stuff. So yeah, this mainly, but since I'm not home a lot and I'm changing location like a lot these days, mm-hmm. I'm not brewing because I cannot control temperature and things like this, and as you know, in Barcelona also it's really, really hot. So yeah, I'm doing mostly like some experiments with quakes, drying the quake here, drying the quake here, and some yeast cakes and stuff like this. But and herbs as well.
I must admit, I was just thinking about Eva's quake, which he like pitched at 55 degrees. So I'll have to work with this now.
Yeah.
Okay, so for people who are joining us today for the first time, so what we're going to do today is we are going to talk about stuff that is first proper for the season. And what we did last time, and that you can listen to in the first episode, is on how to actually prepare everything that you might have foraged or gathered. And again, first, the disclaimer, if you go foraging, only pick what you can safely identify and how to use it. Because some of the stuff you can easily, well, mix up with something that is not really edible. If you're lucky, you're just getting a bad stomach. But depending on what you forage, well, it's easy to poison yourself. So stay safe and only pick what you can identify. Disclaimer, end. All right. So as I said, the thing is, what I definitely need to try again is the blackberry leaves, which you can easily gather also in summer. And the thing is, when we were last talking about yarrow, you mentioned that actually, now is the time for flowers.
Yes.
Because last time, when we were recording in spring, you could only get the leaves or maybe the roots, but there were no flowers yet. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yes.
So, as you see, depending on the season, you might get different things out of the same plant. So, of course, there's There are some berries and fruits that have already come in. So for example, you can already get raspberries depending on what variety you have. You can also get gooseberries. Essentially, gooseberry is the only one that I actually have a recipe for because it's in the Brewer's Almanac. It is a kind of Belgian blonde, which I find highly fascinating. So I think it's, let me look it up. It's a rather strong blonde beer. Yeah, it's a gooseberry golden with Pilsner, Vienna, and Crystal. So, and it's, well, it's supposed to clock in at 6.2 ABV with 26 IBU. So all in all, I would say, yes, it's a Belgian blonde with some fruit added because we also, well, the recipe also mentions that you use the Belgian Abbey ale yeast. So, yep, definitely. So a rather, I would say, not bland, but a straightforward beer that will gain some complexity from the gooseberry, which I must say I'm very fond of. But the problem is the gooseberry bush is not really coming into my garden.
Well, also, if gooseberry, what I would do is, for example, to press it. I would not add the skin if it's not a sour beer, you know, like I would press it and make kind of a juice and then add it. If I want some more spontaneous stuff, I would add everything. But yeah, it's interesting because some of the berries can give you some kind of sweetness. But for example, cranberries is the opposite. I mean, I have tried them 1,000 times. You need to add like a lot of kilos to get something out of it. And it goes really well with some sour, to give some sour beers. Because sweetness, I mean, yeah. So, in Latvia, there is one beer that they brew every year. It's called Zerbenualus, which is a cranberry beer. Red color, of course, and it's very popular. It's really like a low ABV, really refreshing because this hint of sour, but it's really cool. And also in summer, you can forage them. Because now I have in mind that, okay, summer is over. No, I mean, we have some months ahead. So yes, cranberries are already there. Yes.
Yeah, but some of the stuff we'll be talking about is quite early in the season. So for example, when we're talking about what plants to pick, I said, well, I would like to use elderflower. And for example, here, the elderflower season is long gone. So the trees are not flowering anymore. I also remembered that, for example, some of the Berliners that I know, they always do a lindenflower beer, which you can also use because if you have sat under a linden tree in summer, it is like pissing nectar. So it's really, really sticky.
And also it is used a lot for tea as well. So it makes sense. Actually, both of them would be really cool. Elderflowers plus linden flowers in the same beer. They will go really well.
So something to look forward for next year.
Let's do it.
So because currently I did get a 3-liter bag of elderflower. So they are currently frozen. Don't know yet which beer I'm going to use it for. I was thinking about a wheat beer because I found a commercial beer that has, it was a non-alcohol wheat beer that had linden flowers added. I must admit, it was not really my kind of thing, but well, they're frozen, so they're going to keep, so I can think about what beer to use it for.
Here we use it a lot for a kind of champagne. Like it's called champagnette, which is small champagne. But usually it's elderflowers mashed in water a little bit, like, and then you add a little bit of sugar, let it, a little bit of yeast, you carbonate it, put it in the fridge, and maturation time 1 week. And then it's for refreshment mostly, but gives this kind of a hint of some grape, but very, very light.
Yeah.
It's nice.
So essentially, it's also a wild fermentation.
Yeah, you can do wild or you can add some yeast also to speed up everything. And the goal is like make the water a little bit more funny.
All right. Yeah, well, the thing is, I'm thinking as they're already frozen, I think I'm going to use them for dry hopping in a sense because cell walls are already broken down. I should get most of it when I already have some of the alcohol in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, maybe I'll also do a Belgian blonde with them. Yeah. So, and what I have also been experimenting with is rose petals. So, because this is not strictly foraging per se, but we do have two edible roses in the garden. So one is like lemony and the other has a hint of strawberry. So the leaves are edible and I thought, okay, why not? So we always have very many flowers. And also I did use a tincture. I need to check it. So the thing is for this one, I had to use a fermentation weight because very many of the petals, like they floated up. So and this is why I used the fermentation weight. So to press everything down. I must also admit, I did two batches, so not two batches, but I let the first paddle sit for a while. Then when I had thought, okay, maybe. So I didn't get out much from the first like amount I put in. So I decided to, well, because I had still had some flowers going, well, okay, I'll just get rid of the old stuff and put in some new flowers. So I'll have to see whether it has improved the aroma. Essentially, there might be a better way to extract the flavors from the rose petals, which I am going to talk later about. So as I gathered, so alcoholic tincture making with rose petals might not be the best. But well, this is what you're experimenting for.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, the big divider plant, which, well, I'm looking for because I have asked someone for a recipe. Essentially, he's one of the Colonia beer historians, and he did a fantastic beer for one of the home brewing competitions in Germany, in the north, in Stralsund. And essentially, it was a dark beer with honey and lavender in it. So, of course, so for example, I have a lot of lavender in my garden as well. So I'm going to be harvesting this pretty soon. I have two varieties, which is like a small variety that flowers quite early and is now spent. And like the traditional lavender that grows a bit more stalky. And so this one is still going strong. So there's still a lot of bees there. So I don't want to deprive them of their food. So for now, so this one is currently still safe, but the other ones I'm going to harvest pretty soon. And well, we did talk beforehand about lavender. And the funny thing is, whenever I'm talking about lavender, always the first sentence is,
Cancel.
Use it sparingly. So everyone says it. Everyone that has worked with lavender says, be careful. Be careful. It is very strong. And I can imagine, but the thing is, the beer I had with the honey and lavender, it had some amazing aromas that I can only suppose that there was some kind of synergy between the honey and the lavender. And well, I must say, it was amazing. It was a dark, strong, heavy beer, which still was good. Well, because that at that time, there was also like 30 degrees in the north of Germany. So it was hot as hell, but still, the beer was very good.
Nice.
Yeah. So this is what I would choose because lavender, yeah, well, you can't get it in the wild here really in Germany, but well, it's getting warmer and warmer. So my garden is pretty Mediterranean right now.
Yes, here we, end of spring, we could get a lot of lavender here in the forest. It's very Mediterranean, but the flowering tips, now they are mostly gone, the wild ones. And but in the garden, yeah, you can get still. I'm always concerned about this, about not making a perfume and try to keep it low for a beer and some hint or some stuff, mostly unnoticeable things that are there or like this. But yeah, I have never used lavender in beer, actually.
I'm so looking forward to this because I still remember the taste and well, it's simply it was amazing. But yeah, I'm
makes
pretty
sense
sure
for a dark beer. I mean, makes sense for a dark beer, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you overpower it, it's like the mint. It's very easy to overpower it, but also if you let it mature like several months, it will go down and the malts will go a little bit more up and will integrate better, right? I don't know. That makes sense.
So I'm very, very much looking forward to the recipe. Yeah, and so before we get on to your part, so we also did talk about whelp. The thing is, foraging, when you start out, you might be unsure, you might not be sure what you're getting. The thing is, interestingly, summer is also the time where you can get a lot of weird shit at your local gardening center, depending on how they're set up. The thing is, I just got before the episode, I got out into my garden because I have like 5 pots there with all different plants that have an amazing smell. I think when you dry them, they will add something very, very nice to your beer. And it's not stuff like lavender or something like that, but there is also, well, some stuff that you wouldn't like imagine that you can do this. And so I'm just get my glass here so you can see here my little flowering pot. So first of all, mint. You can get all different kinds of mint. So for example, and I'm losing half of the stuff here, this would be spearmint with long spear-shaped leaves, which is a very, very powerful mint. I like it. And this, of course, can add something very nice to a stout. Essentially, when I was just thinking out of the box what beer I would add it to, I was thinking about a porter or a stout. And when I had a look at the Almanac and other books, well, there it was. Tried and true. Dark beer with mint.
Yeah, it's like a... ice cream, mint with chocolate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. The only thing is there is a candy in Germany. It's called After Eight. I don't know if it's also properly. Do you know it? Do we have it in Spain as well?
I don't know, but I have tried it. I don't know where, but here it's not popular. But you can find it, yes. But yes.
The funny thing is, I used to like this as a kid, and at some point, I essentially stopped liking it. So I couldn't have it anymore. And my grandma, who only remembered that, yeah, he likes that, she always gave it to me. Like, come on, I can't eat that anymore. So I hope this is not going to be something similar.
No.
So one of the things that was also quite interesting was a grapefruit mint. So it has a very, very, like, I would say, tart smell. So it gets way stronger when you like pinch the leaves. So you get some of the oils out. Yep. So it has this like more zesty smell. It's not like a real mint. So the mint aroma goes way into the background. I think this would benefit definitely from drying. So to concentrate some of the oils. The good thing is it grows like a weed. So it is like the biggest bush right now. Outside. So you won't have any problems if you have like warm, loose soil. It is going to grow like a weed. So essentially it's a cross. It's the Menta Suaviolens crossed with Piperita. So for the biologists.
Okay.
So and the thing is, depending on how it turns out while drying, I might see this as a very, very subtle hop substitute for the grapefruit aroma. I don't know how strong it's going to get. The good thing is you will have a lot of material. It also went right. So it might add something to your beer. So also this zestiness, maybe. So this could be very interesting. So going on to...
I have found, Philip, that with the mint, the contact time is really important. I mean, you cannot step it for too long because otherwise it's too much. I mean, for me, I don't know, different people have their ways of brewing, but if you are doing cold crush, I usually just add it just before the cold crush, and then I cold crush one day and something like this.
And then you rack it.
Yeah, because otherwise it stays for too long and then it's very powerful. Or the mint in general.
Mm-hmm. So the next one would be honeydew or pineapple salvia. So it's essentially a salvia elegans, and yeah, well, the thing is, it also, it has a very, very subtle pineapple aroma. It's like a sweet pineapple, very, very subtle. So also you might need to put in a lot of there. And the interesting thing is that it also has very, very, very beautiful edible flowers. So if you treat it right, you'll be rewarded with also some very nice flowers as well that you might be putting into a salad. So then I have two that are a bit more specialized. So I don't know what to call this in English. It's essentially in German, it's Kolabusch or Eberraute, which I can only translate to coke herb. So, but Coca-Cola herb, not coke herb. And it is also an Artemisia, Abrotanum maritima. So, and this has like a very, very, very intense Coca-Cola smell. So the thing is, you can also use it to produce a syrup. I did that last year. And well, you can easily produce your own crystal Pepsi like this. Yeah.
But it's an Artemisia, It's an Artemisia.
It is an Artemisia.
Cool.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, there's something in Germany called Colaweizen, where you essentially add Coca-Cola to wheat beer. And I was thinking, just for a joke, to add some of this to wheat beer, so that you just have the smell. So, last but not least, this is one that I haven't encountered before yet. The interesting thing is that essentially it, at some point, well, it bent down and decided to grow like this. So it's like what you can do with cannabis as well, like the wall of green. And it's licorice, Tagetes. Tagetes filifolia, as you can see, filifolia, because you have very, very many fine leaves. And yeah, well, essentially it's a licorice smell. So I think also you might have to use this in a syrup. But the thing is, it might be very nice for porters, stouts, or schwarz beers. So anything dark where you also want to like maybe have some kind of licorice in there. Yeah, well, here, same thing here. They're growing like hell. I need to cut them down a bit and then try which way would be the best to prepare them right now. All right, so that would be my stuff. As I said, depending on your gardening center, you can get a lot of interesting stuff there. So essentially mint you can get in all varieties. You can get chocolate mint, grapefruit mint, spearmint, whatnot. So if mint's your thing, go see your gardening center. because it doesn't grow really in the wild here. So at least not the apple mint. I haven't found anything yet. So in my neck of the woods, you might rather be doing something with stinging nettle.
Yes, it goes really well with barley. Mm-hmm. It goes really, really well. Also, now you can forage that.
Definitely. So there's a shitload of stinging nettle right now. Mm. And the thing is, they have not gotten woody yet. So they are still like flexible, bendable. So the leaves are still also fresh. So just take care because, stinging nettle. What can I say? Everyone has had his or her experience with stinging nettle at some point.
Now I was thinking about the other nettle. I don't remember the name. The one that has these white flowers that you can pick them and put them in the mouth and they're really, really sweet.
This is fake nettle. So it's a Taubnessel in German, essentially like death nettle because, it looks like nettle, but it has these very, very nice flowers where you can just suck out some of the nectar. Yeah.
I was thinking also probably if you're brewing with nettle and the beer goes wrong, mm-hmm. you can use it as levation, like as fertilizer to the other plant. Because I'm just kind of joking, but it's like trying to find the positive part of ruining one batch, you know, it's like.
So this would be, these would be my plants for now. Because as I said, you've talked about this before. I'm also very much on the go right now, so I can't really go much foraging out in the forest. So also, it cuts into my brewing time, but getting some of this stuff and experimenting with it, it is kind of nice because you can try stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, but it involves a lot of time. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for a lot of years and then can plan a bit. But honestly, this year, to catch up with everything, I need to pick my favorites and try a few more because otherwise it's impossible. I usually split batches. I brew 10 liters batch and then I split in 10 different things and then I try different stuff that they haven't tried or different ways with the same ingredient. But splitting batches, but half of it goes down the drain or I use it to do another stuff later. Down the drain, no, because that's a lie.
It goes in the garden.
Or I use it for something else, yes, but no, I usually don't throw anything. But yeah, it's true, it involves that thing to properly understand how to use it and things like this. Yeah. And fine-tune it. Pues yes, everything here is very dry. It was a really, really rainy spring and we have high hopes but everything was going to be like really nice, but no. 2 weeks like intense heat is what it takes to kill everything that wants to.
Yeah, definitely.
Herbs. But I had time to go to the forest and forage some stuff and I start with Artemisia, Bulgaris. Because it's a traditional herb used in brewing. It's mostly used for bitterness to counteract the sweetness of the malt. So, and I found a really cool spot near my house that I can use because before I could only find it in Latvia and here where my area was difficult to find. Yeah, so I spotted it last year because when it has the flowers, then you can totally see that it's Artemisia vulgaris. Otherwise, can be very similar to other ones. So once I saw that it has the flowers, it's okay, this is the spot. So now I know the spot. And now I just try the plant and it's okay, yes, this is Artemisia vulgaris, also called mugwort. Yeah, mugwort. Because Artemisia absinthum is wormwood. It is to be careful a little bit because it's not the same.
Yeah, definitely.
I will try not to make noise, but this is the dry format. You cannot see it a lot, but you can see that the leaves are really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And they are very powerful. It's crazy. I mean, I met one woman in Lithuania that she was brewing her Kepteinis and when she was finishing the raw ale, she was straining the wort through a layer of Artemisia vulgaris. I really love it in dark beers and also in high ABV beers. It gives totally different profile of a bitterness that is really nice. But it's really easy to overpower it. It's really little bit because otherwise, and especially if it's a light beer, it will go over the top. But this is, as I said, it's a traditional ingredient. Mainly I have used it for bitterness because it works really, really well. And you can forage it all summer long, all summer long. What I do is I dry it I just hang it upside down, or you can even put it in the freezer or use it like a fresh. If you want. But like this is very powerful, very powerful. Then, I keep on going, right? I mean, yes. Yeah, so other one is meadowsweet. Mm-hmm. I love that plant because it has salicylates, which was kind of precursor of acetyl salicylic acid, like a made the aspirin, actually, no? In my book, I'm talking a little bit about that. And I really love it. It's like, those are the flowers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are really aromatic. It's really nice. I mean, this is the opposite of Artemisia. Artemisia is really raw, like powerful and for bitterness. This one is very delicate. I mean, it's awesome to use it in combination with Amarillo, Simcoe hops and gives an extra punch. People will ask you, which hop were you using? Because it would be confusing, right? It's like, which one is that? Actually, it's not a hop. Are the flowers of Filipendula ulmaria. You can also buy, actually, I think this is in German, right?
Medusus. Yeah. It's Medusus.
Yeah, but yes.
Yeah.
Medusuit. So here is a kind of a blend of leaves and stalks and
nice
stuff. This you can use for bitterness, but the flowers for aroma, really, trust me. Or even step it in the knockout when you turn off the fire. You just step it there for some minutes when you are cooling the wort, and this is enough. For IPAs, it's wonderful, wonderful.
Nice.
And then it was used traditionally as well when using the juniper decoction, for example, in Norway and different places like this, especially when you brew in summer, you cut the whole plant and you put it in the liquor. And then you boil it all the time. And then you're adding the water that is infused with the juniper and with the... yeah, it's really nice to spot it when it has the flowers. When it doesn't have the flowers, it's not so easy. Usually what I do, I know it already, but if I'm in the field and I find some of it, I always take a leaf and I chew it. I love the taste of this one, and this really nice plant.
I tried cultivating it here in my garden as well. The thing is, at least here in Germany, it prefers very wet soil. And also it can't be too loamy. So rather a bit more loose soil, also very wet. So I have not succeeded yet. I still have some seeds. I might just give it a go in a pot.
Okay, so, yeah. Actually, here in my area, in Catalonia, I haven't found it. I think these flowers, now I'm going to Latvia soon. And what I do is I just forage it there, and then I pack it, and then I bring it here and use it. You can use it as well. It's very similar as these elder flowers. It gives, actually, together would work really, really good for aroma, both
all
of
right
them. Yeah, oh no, and of course, there. If you use fresh flowers, you can use them to inoculate some wort that you're pretending to or willing to brew a sour beer. So this works really, really nice. Then later is, this is also a traditional one in Lithuania. Mm-hmm. It's red clover. It's kind of a trebol.
But the flowers.
Yeah, but the flowers. The flowers are like this. Those have lost a little bit the color.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you see them properly. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
This is the red clover. And of course, they give a little bit of red. It doesn't go wild, but it's interesting because they contain a lot of flavonoids as well as hops. And it's thought that it helps to regulate the menstrual cycle as well as hops, actually. Paradoxically, also, it's red clover, but it's doesn't deliver a lot of color. I mean, you need to add a lot. But for color, there are better things to do, like hibiscus. Now you can get some hibiscus flowers. You can dry them, chop them, and add it there. And this is summer, so you can take them now. But interesting thing of this is it delivers tartness. So it's not some bitterness like Artemisia, not so sweetness or flavor or aroma like meadow sweet. This one is for more tartness. So if you want to brew one beer that is going to be dry, this can be a little bit risky. I mean, I would balance with some more kind of a sweet side beer, and then this on top to balance a little bit or mask a little bit the sweetness, right? That I would play like this. But I mean, yeah, anyone can experiment and do whatever you want. I just dry it and then I'm adding it. Then what else? Keep on going. I find really interesting what you said as well, the blackberry stalks,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
leaves. I started out with the leaves.
With the leaves. Yeah.
I have not worked with the stalks yet because,
stalks.
A lot of horns.
Yeah. A lot of things. But it's interesting because sometimes we think about adding herbs, like a main ingredient, in the boil, right? We need to play it like as well. Or at least I will tell you another option, probably, that is like you can stack the plant material under the false bottom of your filter when you're mashing. It will help the filter as well, or on top of the filter, right? I mean, before the perforated like mesh, or if you have something like this, right? You just lay them there or mix it with the mash. They will infuse during all the malting. If you want, I mean, think like in traditional brewing, they have these wooden vats with no filter. Usually you put some chunks of wood and then you do it with straw or something like this. But in Lithuania and in Russia, and probably much more places that I don't know, they were using like raspberry stalks for the filter. But you can also use blackberry stalks for the filter. Actually, yeah. You can do the same. You are not boiling it really heavily, but you're extracting with the mashing. And this gives totally different
interesting
stuff. So this was typical with raspberry and Lithuania and Russia. Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah, but it makes sense. There's not many animals that actually eat the stalks. I think there's only some varieties of goats that actually eat blackberry stalks. So it would make sense when you have, well, in farmhouse brewing, what have we learned about farmhouse brewing? They are pragmatic. You use whatever you get. Yeah, that's an interesting possibility. I haven't thought about that yet.
Yeah, I thought because, well, as I said, I was doing this straw. How is this called in English? Like a wreath?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was the precursor of...
All right.
I was doing this, and usually now it's time of harvest some barley and some other cereal, and then you have plenty of barley. Usually now in summer, when the farmers, they got the harvest, it's full of straw in the field. So I just go and I take two or three full sacks of straw that I will use in the filter when I'm doing traditional brewing. And also, really, you haven't thought about that. I totally encourage you to take some straw and make a tea, mm-hmm. tea of straw. Infuse it like in mashing temperature or even 70 degrees and then taste it. Mm-hmm. You will see that if you don't add it, probably you don't notice, but it adds something different. I mean, it took me years to understand that some traditional beers, they had some taste that I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I realized, come on, it is the straw.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
So is it complementing the malt or does it like harmonize with the hops? Because I was thinking about maybe doing this also like together with the hop water.
Yeah, you will see. It adds color. Mm-hmm. If you just add hot water, you will see it adds color. And I mean, I don't know, it helps a lot to improving color. It's not a really its best use, but the taste is really interesting.
All right.
It's really interesting. It will go, I mean, you can feel it much more, of course, in the second runnings. I mean, if you are doing the strong beer, then you add more water. And then you ferment it aside, which it would be the table beer, something like this, right? In that one that is weaker, you can feel it much more. I mean, it's interesting. And also, it's in summer, so you can forage that perfectly. yeah, but I'm not sure if I had added this in the thing we talked before, right? I mean, I think I went off track.
The straw wasn't there yet, but...
Wasn't there yet.
Cool.
And then...
Well, of course, we always, at some point or another, come back to straw because it's like the traditional ingredient for filtering. So except like when you have like juniper branches and stalks. So yeah, I think at some point or another, we have talked about straw.
Probably, yeah. And
but
also
not as an ingredient for tea.
Not an ingredient, you see, but no, try it. It's surprising. I mean, it's the best tea that now every day I'm going to drink tea made of straw. No, but it's interesting to see what it can give to the beer. And actually, it's meant for the filter, but actually it adds something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the thing is there is also like roasted barley tea or just barley tea. So, well, depending on what actually gets into the hot infusion. So I just guess that you would have the same like in the stalks as well, but in a rather weak amount.
Yeah. No, but really, it's fun to try it and give something.
All right.
What
things to do with my straw?
Yes.
Make the list.
Yeah, make a list, yes. Then we're talking about the pine cones, things like this, yes. Imagine, I got these ones in February. I don't know if you can see it, but they are swinging there in room. Or I was trying to brew some pirate ale, and then I thought, okay, I mean, we'll use not vodka or something, I will use room. But
fortified ale.
Yes, yeah, imagine, no? Barbarouche ale. So, this is from February, have been here. Now you can get some or some tips from the pine, from needle, and you will have a bunch of C vitamin as well. But actually this is both a little dose of that, and you can dose a strong IPA and give a little bit of character to that. So that is also cool. You are talking about tinctures, right?
Yeah.
One thing that sometimes I wonder, like some people may use a tincture like with all the herbs the same way or all the spices the same way, same alcohol, and then you just put it inside and wait for the magic to happen, right? I mean, it's really cool to think about which compounds do you want to extract, because some of these compounds are more water soluble than alcohol soluble, right?
Yeah.
So choosing the alcohol that you are going to use, it matters, because probably if you use high proof alcohol, all the ones that are more water soluble or not destroyed or things like this, you are going to not get the benefits on that ones. And probably you wanted this. I mean, think about that, or dilute a little bit the alcohol as well, not use it as is. So it's also fine-tuning, eh?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but for example, in regards to clear spirits, there is a quite wide variety in Germany where you can, like, I think the weakest one has, like, the weakest clear one has, like, 25, then you have, like, 30, and then it goes on to vodka with 40 and, like, well, strong vodka with 50. I don't know how much corn has, because I'm not really a corn drinker, but this is like the weakest clear spirit that you can get here in the supermarket. So still a lot of water.
Yeah, well, at the end, it's the same approach. If you want to add some of these herbs, some of them in fermenter, you need to wait till there is some alcohol. So all the aromatics, they don't escape. They are not so, those volatiles are more trapped, that if you add them at the beginning of fermentation, you're going to lose them, right? It's the same approach. You need to think. It's not the ingredient. It's the ingredient, but it's when I use it, how I use it, how I process it. And same thing, you can get several different stuff. Mm. And that's the beautiful thing, to know how
definitely.
To use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then one thing that is interesting, because now here is full of prunes everywhere. And then you remove the bone. You can also blend and add it. You have really, 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 how do you say that? Some prunes that are kind of wild prunes that are even astringency. You cannot even put it in the mouth of the tannin that they have because it's really dry. But this really works well for warts of high gravity, because you are going to get a lot of sweetness, and then you compare it with these ones that probably you were not thinking to use it. This you can use. Also, you can give color with the prunes.
Mm. I think I know which ones you're talking about. I think they are a kind of prunes. I might be telling complete bullshit here because I'm not too familiar with the plant, but Schlehen is like a kind of like very small wild prune.
Yeah,
so normally you don't eat them, so you rather use it for distilling.
Looks like blueberry, right? But
it has a bone. Very, very small, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This one. With this, we mm-hmm. use it here to brew pacharán. Pacharán is a liquor from Basque country, from north. We use anise. Anise is the distillate that is really sweet. And then, so it's really, really sweet. So you add this inside, it stains red, really red.
Yeah, definitely.
And this awesome. You mash it for five months, mm-hmm. little bit of chamomile.
Chamomile. The ingredient that I've always seen in several beers, but I must admit, I've never really, well, gotten the taste of it.
It can go really wrong. Really, can go really wrong because it's like... To understand it, you need to pick one and bite it. Mm. I mean, it's
Of course.
Yes. And the last thing, I mean, I because of my blood sugar, it works really well, or they say that fig leaves works really well in a tea for controlling blood sugar. So I started brewing it at the tea, I mean, every day, like a little bit of ginger, ta-ta-ta, and... Here is full of fig trees in the forest and stuff, full of wild ones. So they are really aromatic. You just take some of them, let it dry in the sun, or even you can put them in the oven. You will see the smell. It's really nice, really nice. So you can use them in brewing, but also you can get it's not a fruit, I think. Fig is not a fruit. It's kind of I don't know if it's a bear. I don't know. It's a flower, but it grows the opposite. So I don't know if technically we can say that it's a fruit. But anyways...
We'll add it to the show notes.
Yes, yes. Comment if it's a fruit or not, right?
Yeah, yeah. Tell us if you think it is a fruit or not.
Is fig a fruit? Yes. So what I do is like a...
Oh, that actually might be a good thing to put it on Insta. Like, really, this
interaction.
Is fig a fruit?
Yeah.
Tell us, A, B, or C.
The fig is really nice. What I do is I cut it, I remove the skin. I place it in a tray, metal tray, and then they dry. They dry in 2 days. And this is pure sugar. Then you can add them during the boil in a beer. And then it gives some kind of nice complexity. And they are really good to make beers that are meant to be aged, because they give different kind of sweetness. And and they're really nice. And you can dry them, and then you have them for all year long.
One question here that springs to my mind. Have you tried caramelizing them and then brewing with them?
Yeah, I was about to say, yes, you can make it. because we have a really huge fig tree. And since I'm diabetic, I cannot use, to catch up, I cannot eat all of them. So we tend to dry them, some of them. And the other part, we make jam. But jam without adding any sugar, because it's already sweet, right? So we boil it for 3 hours. We simmer it for 3 hours. And then these small jars, you can fortify a beer. Usually I do it with the table beer, because it's already weak. So it's weak, and I just add it like if it were honey. And then I pump the gravity up, and then I get a little bit stronger beer with different flavor.
But no second fermentation then? Or
no, I add it in the boil to get... But you also can add it, yes, at the end.
Okay, it's I see what you're getting into now.
Yeah.
All right.
And then if you allow me, I just remember like a tomato. You can brew a really cool tomato gose with dried tomatoes. So tomatoes, everyone can harvest tomatoes probably or during summer, or you have these garden centers that Philip was mentioning. So just dry the tomatoes or buy them dried, not in the jars that are mixed with oil. No, dry. And then you just put it in the coffee grinder and you grind them till powder. And then you add a little bit of, I add double of sodium to the recipe, like a 40 ppm, which is the maximum of sodium. So I go to the maximum, which is 40 ppm, not bad for the heart. So I pump a little bit the saltiness of the beer because I intended to do some gose, like tuning it. And then you add the tomato powder with some black pepper, and you will have an amazing tomato gose beer. You will see, this is one of my favorite late recipes.
Cool. Although I must say, I would rather use a blender because I cherish my coffee grinder very much and I wouldn't run tomatoes through them.
Okay. Yeah, well, I have two hot coffee grinders. One for my freaky stuff that at home they say, and another one for the coffee. These paprikas, these chilies. You can get some chilies also, and you add it to this gose. And with the tomato, the black paprika, and a little bit spicy.
Although I must admit, judging from what you've added, it rather sounds like a Bloody Mary gose.
Yeah. Yes, totally. That's the thing.
Now you only need to add some celery.
Well, feel free. I haven't yet, but only with these three ingredients. I'll probably prepare it with the second runnings. I brew one different beer, which is the strong one, and the weak one, I prepare the tomato gose for refreshing now in summer, a little bit more carbonated, and I let it acidify for 1 day in the kitchen. I add a little bit of yogurt, natural yogurt. I add it there. I leave it 1 day. Next day is already sour. Boil it, normal. I destroy the microorganisms, but the acidity is there. You can even add hops if you want.
Nice. Funny thing about yogurt, I have done several batches now here at home. The only stuff that really worked out was the vegan yogurt. I can't do normal milk yogurt, apparently. I don't know whether the culture is dead or what went wrong, but all of the normal yogurt, it didn't work out.
Use, Actimel.
Yeah.
This is perfect. But then we need to give the patent to Danone, because it's Lactobacillus casi immunitas. But okay, nobody needs to know. This is full of Lactobacillus, full. So you just add a little bit of Actimel, and then you have a perfect sour peach to start with.
Yeah, I don't know what went wrong. I tried two batches of the normal yogurt, and it just didn't work out. Whereas the vegan yogurt, don't know what happened, it just worked.
Yeah, nice.
All right, so there was one thing that you wrote on the list that you haven't mentioned yet, which I am curious to find out, because I don't know if we were talking about the same thing, but you also mentioned wild strawberries.
Yeah, because in Latvia, at least, they grow, you can forage them before blueberries and before cranberries. So actually are the ones that when you go to the forest are the ones that you are eating like crazy. They're small, as you know. So you can use it to brew a sour beer with a hint of strawberry. You just, the same we did with the tomato. I mean, you just you have your main word, you add some HTML or some yogurt that works for you, or sour pitch or whatever you want. Give it acidify till you like. I mean, I usually use one day, depending on temperature, of course. You taste it and then you boil it. And then what I do is I proceed. Normally, I add some hops and I ferment it. And then in the cold side, I add the puree.
All right.
And then you add the puree there. The only problem is like you need to do a really nice cold crush to later when you are bottling to homogenize all the bottles. Otherwise, you will have some with more puree or less. But one thing we haven't talked also is like when you are foraging at the beginning of the summer, end of spring, I mean, summer solstice, all the plants are in their peak of energy. So they are very powerful. Is one of the best moments to harvest or forage some herbs and things like this. Fruits, you can postpone it, right? But some plants, I think they are called even mercury plants because they grow in Gemini and things like this. But I don't want to be too mystical, okay? But it's interesting also when you...
Yeah, actually, but I was thinking about the same thing that, I showed you all of the tweaks that I just got from the plants. So right now I see due to the heat that they're actually starting a bit to fade. So, but I thought to give it one more week so that they might soak up some more sun. And then it's like going through all of the garden and, taking what is there.
What is there?
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Well, of course, I mean, we could continue with the list because the summer is... endless. I mean, but
there are so many possibilities also in regards to herbs. Also, when you're going foraging in the woods, depending on where you live, you have so many varieties. So this is like a small excerpt. As I said in the first episode, the best thing to get yourself is like a plant dictionary, so that you can see what is growing actually, for example, in Middle Europe. And depending on the book you're getting, you will also see where it is growing. So that you might know, okay, maybe I need to do a longer trip to forage this. Interestingly, I was offered that somebody might mail me juniper because I can't get juniper for the life of me. So my juniper plant is growing very, very slow. So it would be a shame to cut it down for brewing. But apparently in some other areas, it grows like hell. And actually, I was offered some. But yeah, I was offered, I can send you it by mail. I just packed two bags.
Yeah, the thing, you know, I mean, regarding what you are talking about, the disclaimer at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
I'm in a chat that we're talking about a lot of Quake and traditional brewing from Norway and things like this. And people from around the world are sending pictures with brewing with juniper and things like this. And some of them are Juniper Sabina. And it's like, what the fuck? Don't use that. I mean... really, I have said it like 3 or 4 times, people using wrong juniper, and this can go really, really wrong. I mean, probably you will not get a fatal dose one day, but this is like kind of a no. I mean,
essentially, it is the stuff you don't want to be brewing with because essentially and simply it's poisonous.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but a lot of people, I have seen a lot of photos like with this. I mean, what I recommend is like if you don't want to use the branches, mm-hmm. You can get, of course, the effect is not the same, but you can go to the, how is the name, Herborist? You can go there and you can buy the berries that are the galbulae. You can buy the berries and you know for sure that there are juniper communis. You just can smash them and use them also in food or preparing sauce for meat. But in brewing, you will see. If you're not sure, you can use pine needles. I mean, then you just add the juniper berries on top and that's all. But yeah. Yeah, and also what you're saying, Philip, is like people go to mountain. I'm really angry at that. I mean, people go to mountain and start chop juniper like there is no tomorrow. I mean, it takes a long time to grow. In Norway, in Lithuania, in Finland, it's full of juniper. People do a lot of juniper, but in different places, we don't have a lot. So we cannot go there. Oh, I'm going to chop it and kill it. It's like,
yeah. This is also what we mentioned in the first episode. If you're going foraging, be respectful. Leave some for the plant, leave some for others as well. Don't go nuts because some of the plants, they are, essentially hardy enough to grow, but they won't survive a severe chopping down.
Yeah.
And for example, I can say from my own experience, juniper grows, but it grows very, very slow. So to get a decent amount for brewing when you start out, for example, with a plant like this, it's going to take years until you get enough of your own to like, have enough for like, one or two brewings.
Yeah, so, you can use a straw and things.
Well, in regards to the straw, it might be good if you can't find an organic farmer that doesn't use too much pesticides.
Yeah, what they do, one thing I forgot, nice to mention, that you need to scald it with hot water first. I mean, you need to wash it. Yes, you need to wash it.
Yeah. So the thing is, I was driving with my dad, and I was thinking, isn't that kind of small? Is it due to the heat? And no, they spray it with something, with stuff like that, that makes it grow short.
Yeah.
They don't have too much stalk. And I was thinking, there is something like that.
Yeah, I read one book actually from Sweden that the Gotlandsdricka, the beer from smoked beer from Gotland in Sweden, they're using juniper in the filter. But they said that juniper was used substituting the long barley or rye or oats, the long one with the stalk, because the filter is like a broom that you stuck there and then the stalks into it all. And since now the barley varieties and all of this, they keep it like this, you cannot make a proper filter with that. And then I read in that book, this guy was a anthropologist from Sweden. I was researching all of that. I don't know if he's 100% sure or not, but he says that probably the use of juniper came because of it was not available to find long straw anymore. And if you go to Lithuania now, they use rye. If they have their endemic or their different kind of barley, is okay. But mostly they use rye because it's the one that grows the tallest for the filter, and that's the main reason.
Yeah. Well, as we said, know what you're foraging, and if you're not foraging something wild but rather from a field, wash it. Yeah, there are some pitfalls to foraging and gathering, but we try to tell you what we know and what you can do safely. And as we said, some of the things you have to find out and do for yourself.
Yeah, logical things. It's like, if you're foraging from the down part of the plant, think about you are passing there. So probably people with dogs as well. So if dog pee, you are going to get an extra bonus for your beer if you don't wash all these herbs. So there are things that we don't think about that, but they're pretty logical. I always try to get my vegetal material from up. And if not, I wash it properly or one place that is not, there are not a lot of people passing.
Yeah. Also, some of the, if you're talking about parasite infection, most of the parasites won't survive freezing, for example. So this is another way to make it safe. Also, it helps break down the cell walls, depending on what you want to use it for. And that actually brings us to the small recap about what you can actually do with everything that you forage. So a very quick recap, as we have talked about, is doing a tincture, a hot extraction, a cold extraction, either water or alcohol based. We mentioned last time that a hot steep method would be good if you want to know what actually your ingredient would bring to your beer. So you essentially do a malty, and then you add your ingredient that you want to find out what it is good for, and then you just try. Although, do a triangle test, because you need to have your baseline and then try to find out, what is actually the thing that I'm looking for. So, and of course, freezing, essentially when we're talking about fruit, freezing always helps breaking down cell walls. It also, sterilizes the thing because most microorganisms don't survive freezing. And that would be the most common stuff. The thing that I just recently discovered, and I must say I found about this method this week, is that you can also do an oxymel, which translates to sour honey. And essentially you use a mixture of either sugar, which is then called a shrub, or honey vinegar mixture, which is then called oxymel. And then you use your plant material and you mix it and let it sit for a while. I'll include an oxymel recipe in the show notes. Depending on the recipe, you let it sit for a few weeks, you let it sit for a few days, also depending on what you're trying to extract. But I found this interesting because, it's a nice mixture of sweet and sour. Thinking about the goza right now. So it might be interesting what that can bring to a beer as well. And apparently it's a very, very old method. When I was loosely Googling for oxymel, I also found something like oxymel Hildegard von Bingen recipe, which is like a famous
famous nun that wrote a herbal book and lots of recipes. So it is, well, and essentially the name itself is Greek.
You know that when I think I mentioned it in my book, she wrote the first description of female orgasm.
Yeah, well, nuns were not always the same. Yeah, well, but this is, this would be the newest thing that I encountered and I wanted to share with you. So I'll be sure to include the recipe, or at least the base recipe, because essentially you can do whatever you like. I also think it might be nice if you maybe throw some nuts into the mix. So also for astringency. But yeah, well, try. Yeah. So not everything might work out, but it's still fun trying though. And also
you can go. You can
look at. Yeah. And also looking forward to the next season. For example, I'm very much looking forward to gathering acorns for fermenting. But this is what you definitely have to take into account. When you are going foraging, sometimes you have either to wait for the right time or you have to wait until the product is finished.
Yeah. No, it's a long process. Yes, to find your spot with everything. Yeah, it's what I told you. I mean, you don't notice some plants till they don't flower. And then it's like, okay, now I see that they are there or things like this. It's interesting.
Yeah, I need to pester my dad a bit more because at some point I always ask him, where can I find this? Do you know where I can find this?
Exploit your family. I mean, totally.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, you have kids, go to forest and you have, I exploit my grandma, my grandpa, because he drinks everything I do. So he's kind of waiting because he's tasting, but he's 99. So I think we are doing pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
no, really, it's cool. It takes time, but at the end you can have some nice recipes that you can do every year. And then you're looking forward for this time of the year.
Yeah, definitely. You can make a tradition out of it. So, and yeah, well, I don't know about you, but I think we share the same notion here. It is good to get out into the woods.
Yeah, it's healing. Totally.
Yeah, definitely. So, and that note going out like two goddamn hippies.
No, please. And think about a fig, like a flower or a fruit or what it is.
Well, Javi, really, we can't be hippies.
No.
We're definitely lacking the hair.
Yeah, I forgot to say I added as ingredient in a beer, but it was it was in autumn, so we will talk about that
All right. So it has been fun. Really like having you on the show always.
Thank you.
And well, with that, we conclude this episode of Out of the Woods into the Brew Summer Edition. So let's meet in fall. The episode I'm really dreading because I think it's going to be about mushrooms. All right, so as always, I'm saying stay thirsty and ciao.
Das aktuelle Bierstudio wird von Dr. Philipp Leiber produziert und aufgenommen und ist lizenziert unter den Creative Commons BY-NC 4.0. Das heißt, ihr dürft das Werk bzw. den Inhalt vervielfältigen, verbreiten und öffentlich zugänglich machen bei folgenden Bedingungen. Ihr nennt den Namen des Podcasts, das aktuelle Bierstudio, und es gibt keine kommerzielle Nutzung.